Thanks for staying through to this late part of the day where we're going to take some questions and, of course, also get some answers from our presenters through the day. I feel really kind of guilty because I've seen these guys work all day and I've just been watching them from the back of the room. And so before we kick off, I think it'd be great just to give our presentation team just a quick round of applause for the work they've done through the day. I'm not sure I've ever seen so many demos in that period of time before. It was pretty impressive. So we've just got general Q&A, and then we'll finish up. After the questions are exhausted, we've still got the Surface Book to give away. We've got a couple of microphones in the room. So there is what I will call microphone A, which is over there with the lady just there waving nicely at the microphone A. We've got microphone B over here with the lady waving nicely at microphone B. And I've got microphone C, which is a deployable device. And I can just send microphones, see wherever we want to go. So, folks, if you've got questions, if you take our first question, if somebody wants to make their way over to the lady with microphone A, and we'll see if we can kick off our Q&As. Or if somebody gets to microphone B first, and the gentleman here is sitting right by it, I think you win that race, sir. Let's start with you, sir, at microphone B.
Hello.
Hello.
It's a question I asked earlier, but there wasn't an answer available, so I was just wondering if I could ask the team. Is inking available with hosted web apps in text boxes?
I'm trying to think, is it available? Like, is Ink Reco? Because you're saying in text boxes.
You know how the demo that you did?
You did ink, so think about that, that's ink recognition. So that's us taking the ink strokes, converting them into characters. Is that available in a hosted web app? I'd have to check on that exactly. I thought it was available, but there might be limitations to what it can do. Because that was done with XAML, where we do have all of that built in automatically, and I have to make sure it's available through Edge HTML, and the ability to convert the strokes. But we should double check on that. I'm not positive.
Okay, thank you.
Cool, thank you. One of these gentlemen down here, I feel it has to be you. Just wait for that to come live.
Live?
Live.
Yes. Well, are there any plans to bring Project Centennial apps to Windows Phone, HoloLens, Surface Hub, etc.?
Okay, I knew this wasn't going to work. I can't take sitting in the chair. It's really awkward.
Go for it.
So, are we going to bring them there? Something we're looking at. We're not against doing that and bringing them there. Obviously, there are challenges with bringing it because we don't have the entire operating system on those devices. Right now, there are ways different companies have done it. They've done remoting, and they bring them there, okay, and they run. So it's something that we want to make sure is available in some way, shape, or form. Like I said, people have done them with doing some sort of remoting technology from the phone and being able to run those when in continuum mode. So I don't know that we have any plans to run them while you're only on a phone, but when you're in continuum, there's some interesting scenarios. We have the large screen, you have the mouse, they're sort of designed for that. It'd be great if we enabled that in some way. And we'll do it in the highest fidelity way, and remoting seems right now to be the way, or VM or something like that, that people have done.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We've not had anyone visit the microphone over here yet. And this side of the room is staying very quiet in the sense of questions as the gentleman coming running forward. While you're on the way to the microphone, this gentleman had a question.
Does it work? Okay. So, about hosted app and notifications, will they integrate with a Windows 10 notification center, or will they be like a toast, outside, like a pop-up, like, I don't know, Chrome ones, or Firefox ones, in a hosted app?
Can you repeat that again?
So, the hosted app scenario, when you have a web, so you have a hosted app, you have a notification, on the website you get the toast, or you get the
those
pop-up.
Will be integrated through the regular notification center. Chrome could actually do that if they chose in their application. They've chosen up till now not to, but they're just an application. They could actually go call. If you call the Win32 toast notifications that are built in there, we remap them and go through the action center. That's why if you look at Outlook 2016 or something like that, all their notifications go through the action center because we've replumbed the standard Win32 APIs to go and call those. So Edge, our hosted web apps will integrate directly and have access in the Action Center. You can actually get all the Action Center APIs from the hosted web app.
Thank you. The gentleman over here has been patient. Sir, your question.
So The question is about App Converter. And let's say we want to upgrade one of our line of business apps, or we have a bunch of line of business apps in the company, and we want to use the App Converter to put them on a store, but we don't want to put them on a public store. We want an internal store so that we can use the upgrades, and there's a new release available as we upgrade them, but it's only within our company. Is that something in the pipeline?
Yeah, we have the Windows Store for Business. So you can actually use the Windows Store for Business. I know how it shows up for us. I get an extra tab called Microsoft. So when you enroll with AAD, you'd actually get as a company, you can go and control and say it's only deployable to your store. And therefore it's published there, it's nice, it's integrating the experience, and literally it's just another tab in the UI that lists your company name. When I click there, I can see all the Microsoft apps. And you'll be able to do it for your company as well. That actually exists now. So they don't have to wait for Centennial or anything like that. Exactly. That's how you also control enrollment, right? It was when they go to their workplace and they enroll, that's how we know to show that, make that show up in the UI of the store application.
Okay, I think we have a question. It's worth saying the Store for Business enables that sort of private store for companies. It also enables companies to buy from ISV developers, whether they're currently in store or not. It's quite a powerful thing. It's definitely worth checking that out. And Jay was over here at microphone B.
Yeah, just a question for Xbox UWP. When can we expect integration with things like Xbox Live Services, Rich Presence, that kind of thing? Or rather, should we expect that kind of integration for UWP?
Yes, there'll be Xbox Live integration with UWP.
Will that be available for all apps or just for partners?
It will be available for, you have to sign up as a partner for Xbox Live. So that you have to go sign up for. And once you have a developer license for it, then you go and you can go use Xbox Live and light that up inside of your application.
Okay, so it'll be limited. Will that mean that all UWP apps that we see in the future will have to go through that process?
You won't have to.
It's an option.
Use
right.
Xbox Live. They're for applications.
Okay.
There's going to be some, I'm not going to talk about the policy associated with games on the Xbox.
Because
we have
later.
Not announced what that policy will be. So I'm just not going to answer it. I have not stated yes or no. I've just not stated what it will be for games. But for apps, that'll be an option. We will not be required for apps.
Okay, thank you.
Cool, thank you very much. The lady's waiting over there on the first microphone.
I'm intrigued to know what the acquisition of LinkedIn means for developers.
Yeah, I don't think we're ready to state what that is. I'd go exactly with whatever Satya said yesterday.
It was worth a try.
To be honest with you, I actually don't know. I found out what everybody else did too.
Right.
So,
yeah, in the news announcement from the Microsoft News Center, we explained the acquisition, and there was a call for investors yesterday that covers what they're thinking in that sense. So it's worth looking into it. Just find the presentation that they did yesterday. There's a nice slideshow on how they're thinking that the two companies align in their goals and et cetera. So it's worth finding out.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think it was a very good try. Gentleman in the check shirt was waiting for the ball to arrive.
Right. Is any? Yep.
Go.
Okay.
Go, yes.
Regarding Azure, you mentioned for Internet of Things you make like LWM2M, but protocols. But I'm interested in MQTT. Do you have any?
Yeah, it also supports MQTT over TCP.
Okay, but yeah, do you have any SDK or any guidelines or something?
Yeah, so that's part of the Azure IoT SDK. If you are putting that into your devices, we can the SDK that we provide for the different types, C and a bunch of C# and others, that will enable, you can enable it over MQTT, there's a couple of other protocols, so MQTT cool. And AMQP and then TCP IP, the regular right. one over HTTP as well.
Cool, thank you. Thank you. Gentleman over here was waiting. What's your question, sir?
Yeah, hi. I was wondering about the AppX packages. is there any way, if you have something where you don't maybe have the source code anymore, but you want to sort of package it nicely to make the boss happy, is there any way to make change in the Apex package to leverage new things that you can't call, because you don't have the code, you can't call new API functions. So you can map, like, yeah, I want notifications to go to this bit of C# code or something.
So I need to know exactly what you're trying to remap. Basically, what the App Converter does really is it runs a little VM, it records everything that you modify while your setup or MSI is running, and it plugs that into the AppX. So it really is only a setup installer, and it creates identity. And then it takes a store identity and binds it in, and that makes a lot of APIs work. But unless you change the code, I don't know that we remap anything. I mean, you could do that. Like, if it's really just a technology you'd have to go change. We don't do anything special to make something happen. We virtualize the registry, so no write to the registry really happens. We put it in our own little private registry so we can delete it. And we virtualize some of the file system directories. The ones that would have, like, you know, basically your home directory, or expected directories, known directories for the application. Other than that, it does very little. Mainly that way the apps run unmodified.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. We're back over here. Go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. I hope it's not a stupid question, really, but for some strange reason, a big part of our users are still using BlackBerry and RIM. And I saw that you have Android and iOS, obviously. And I was wondering if it was possible, if it even made business sense to develop something with RIM still, if that was even possible, really. So that's my question.
Yeah.
So would you be able to, there's iOS, Android, would it be possible to roll out something in RIM at all?
RIM.
BlackBerry.
I know. It's
strange because we have a particular target among our users who are on BlackBerry and not the others, which was the case.
Considering several of these libraries are open sourced, you have the complete freedom to do that work, and we're all for it.
I don't think so. I know it's a silly question, but I was wondering.
I'm joking a little bit about it, but yeah, we're prioritizing, you know, high volume where we think there's high developer interest, and that's the first I've been asked, so it's probably not on the
curiosity
list.
Curiosity, that's it.
But
thank you. All right.
And don't forget you've got a browser on that, so you can still execute some JavaScript. So.
All right, thank you. All right.
Not sure how compatible it is, though.
All right.
No.
Kept the web standard going.
Thank you. In the middle of the room, we have a returning customer.
Thank you.
I've got an idea. You've got a long list of questions.
Okay.
So let's go with your next one, please.
Yes, the next one. There are some MSI packages which the developer asks the user, hey, would you like to install only some features of the app? Would you like to install all features of the app? Do you have a license? Do you have anything? How will Windows Store handle this when the app converter is run and converted at the MSI to an APPX? Will the store pop messages, hey, would you like to enter the license?
So most of it is done by scripting. So you have basically MSI scripting. We do not support scripting in AppXs. On purpose, because if you ever want an update happening, you're not going to prompt during the updates either. And if you want to install it during an upgrade of the operating system, or install it on other devices, again, we don't want those prompts. So we would not handle this. Anything that's done with custom handlers or scripting inside of the MSI installer, none of that stuff will be supported in the produced AppX package of the converter.
That's an example of a situation where you might want to, in time, add some functionality to this app so that you could, you know, as Kevin showed, have in-app purchase or options for the user, but you'd light up a bit of different functionality in the app through a more direct interaction with the user. But, yeah, you wouldn't be able to do it during the install phase. Yep.
To be honest, I think we're moving away from a model where at install time you ask it all, because we just think it's a harsher time to ask. You know, just for an opinion, most of the time you want an app to get installed, then to get some usage. Then you can ask those questions. So I just think it's probably a more common user pattern that we see now. But it's something we could consider. Optional packages we are going to support, where you'll be able to break your app into different packages and download them. But we will not do that automatically, and we definitely won't prompt to ask. But you can still do them as separate packages. So you can achieve much the same goal of having, like, you know, in games a lot of times it's different levels. So you'll be able to accomplish the goal, but I think it'll be done the way you described it. But you can do the optional package thing.
Cool. Thank you for your question. Gentleman over here on microphone B, please.
Hello, gents. Will it be possible to use the Ubuntu for Windows environment directly from a Visual C++ runtime component in the near future?
Can you give me a little more of the scenario you're trying to accomplish?
Taking the source code for a Linux utility, compiling it as a runtime component within a Windows 10 application.
I mean, you'll
obviously it can't at the moment, but is it something that's coming down the line? Or
I mean, the ELF binaries will only load inside of that subsystem, and none of them are graphics, so they won't run any graphics at all because there's no graphical capability enabled by the subsystem. Yeah. But I mean, the ELF binaries are produced and run, so the Ubuntu subsystem can only run ELF binaries. It can actually not run Windows binaries. And then in the Windows side, if you recompiled, you recompile it to a Windows component, and you have to make sure that it's compatible, has all the right libraries, and it links correctly. But just think of them as, ultimately, think about which binary you're producing, and then in those subsystems, which binary will load.
But it won't be possible to directly compile Linux source?
It works no differently. If you're working in Visual Studio, it's going to use the same libraries that come in Visual Studios, and if it's compatible C++, it will compile. If it's not compatible C++, it will not compile. Okay. The subsystem is about executing it in that environment with that binary, not about a compilation merging.
You don't see the compilation merging at some point.
I need to understand the scenario you're trying to accomplish. I think what you're really asking is for Visual Studio to either support compiling to ELF binaries.
Correct, yeah.
Is that I don't know of any plan that I
even though GCC on Bash, on Ubuntu, on Windows will do that.
Yeah, but these are really separate worlds. Really, the goals we're trying to accomplish is not to make Visual Studio into a way to go build Linux applications.
Okay.
And we really are keeping those two worlds distinct. If we try to blend them, we'll lose compatibility. And that's what other tools like Cygwin tried to do, where they tried to blend it, and you just don't get as much. And so those are out there, you can go leverage and use them, but you end up losing the fidelity of each platform as you blend them together. And we felt like the real goal was, hey, make this run full fidelity. So we run it inside of a subsystem.
Thanks.
Cool, thank you. Go down to the gentleman in the blue shirt on the mic.
Hi, my question's about the composition API. It was a great demo earlier with the cogs. But my question is, would it gracefully degrade if you ran that app on a Pi, for example?
So yeah, the composition, yeah. So with the Gears one that I showed. The composition layer where you're working on the GPU. So yeah, the Pi obviously doesn't have those same capabilities. So if you're going to run it on a IoT device, then some of the Intel-based ones have got a GPU. You could take advantage of that. So yeah, you'd have to be you couldn't expect the same perf from a Raspberry Pi, for example.
But is it would the same code base still run without any changes?
I believe they have the same driver level support on DX. As long as they have a driver on there that supports the same DX level, the code should run the composite effects. Definitely it'll be affected by the performance of the memory and the graphics card.
Absolutely.
But that we basically go by the DX level that's on the card. And I believe that they would support those. I can't remember exactly what was shown in the demo, but I believe everything I saw in the demo would probably run on the Pi.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you. I'll come to you in a minute, sir. Gentleman over here, my friend over here.
Some of us are still working with an older meaning of the word add-ins. Will Apex support Visto add-ins for Office applications?
I'd have to know how. Yeah, I'd need to understand more of exactly what you mean. Like, when you're saying is, can you, as you install the Apex, also install the add-in for
Office?
The
add-ins are basically the Visto, Visual Studio tools for Office add-ins. We create MSIs and we install them in Visio, in my case, and because we don't have yet the newer app, which is now being called add-ins framework. We have the older Visto add-in framework.
I don't know that technology very well, but my guess is no.
Yes, my guess is no. So yeah. Because it's been made for standard application and for add-ins, you need to register to the
COM model of Office and to be loaded with the different registry keys. And I'm almost sure it's not the case. I can double check that. But what would be the idea is to push your add-ins on the Windows stores for visibilities and discoverabilities?
Yes. And let me
explain where I think the way add-ins will work in the future and actually how the Edge extensions work today. The way Edge extensions work is Edge knows about them. And Edge will go to our store APIs and say, enumerate all of the extensions on the machine that were designed for me. And so Office would need to go to our store APIs and say, enumerate all of the extensions installed for me, and then it would get the DLL and be able to load it. So it's really a feature of Office. And the way that our add-ins work is they also are just AppXs that get installed, but they don't actually run. There's no executable binary. Instead, the app that they're an extension of knows how to load them. And they don't even have to be DLLs. They can just be like resource packages, and they can go load them. So it's really the application that would need to go do that, and Office has not done that to integrate with the store.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. This gentleman's been waiting very patiently. I don't want to break your lovely... Okay.
Hello, hello. Hi there. My question to the team, especially Andy, regarding UWB apps. I got a little bit of scenario going on here. I got Windows 10 running on a Mac via Parallel. The stock apps that is supplied by Windows team runs quite snappy, loads quite faster on an SSD because it has an SSD. I've got an HP notebook at home, which runs on 5400 RPM hard drive. The stock apps and UWB apps especially, there seems to be like, you know, experience a lot of jitters, take quite time to load. Why is this phenomenon happening? It's not only specific to my laptop, I've seen it in other laptops as well. So the, you know, performance seems to be higher on SSDs compared to the traditional hard drives. Can you explain that for me? Does that have anything to do with like asset streaming?
So I'm not sure I could speak on performance on particular hardware configurations. I mean, in a general sense, as you know, we're working very hard to with things like .NET Native to make sure that moving on, you know, with the current UWP apps, we're making sure at runtime we're executing native code. So you're getting the very best perf for that you could possibly get on the hardware where you're running. But there's nothing particularly in the runtime that's going to say, oh, we're running on this kind of SSD.
Oh, you're being polite. You're running in a Mac on Parallels. I'd blame the Mac. I'm just going to tell you, it's virtualizing all the access and all the calls. Why is running slower? If you can get that to run on a Windows device and the SSD and the hard drive are that different, that would make sense to ask us. But I think what you're really going to probably find is somehow it's Windows running on Parallels, running on Macs. Somewhere in that pipe, something is virtualizing and making it run differently. So I just think run it on a Windows PC. I have not seen that kind of performance difference. Therefore, the only thing is there is in the virtualization technology that we wouldn't be running. The thing with that's underneath Windows, I'll blame the Mac. Or Parallels, pick your choice.
Well, it works.
I haven't seen it on a Windows device at all.
It still works better, but I'm a PC user.
Have you tried it on a regular PC? I have not seen. 5400 is a pretty slow drive. You know,
yes, that's why.
So, if you run a slow drive and it's big, it's going to take time to load it.
It is quite big.
So, that's just how.
Yeah, the experience came from big games, man. They're running huge. Quantum Break. I actually downloaded the game. I was quite admirer of the game. I've been following for quite a long time. But I had a more powerful hardware, but I still jitters. Mm. So I was quite, actually shocked to see like traditional Win32 apps, the previous one, they ran quite fluidly. For example, the older games, they still run faster, but although they're quite like graphic intensive or hardware-intensive ones, the specifications are quite higher.
Yeah, I think you're just, there's no way we can diagnose why it's jittery. A lot of things, match drivers, virtualization, however you're going and doing that. We have seen, in essence, we demoed it on stage of build. We took, cutting-edge AAA games, we ran the UWP, the Win32 apps, side-by-side, exact same frame rate. Our Xbox team went, looked at the frame rates. We believe we achieve full fidelity throughput with UWP as well as with Win32, and they're in essence equal. We've seen no difference. The only time you tend to see a difference is there's some kind of driver issue. But and that's where, especially where some games cheat and try to match themselves to specific drivers and do some behavior that's different. And, typically those things are very fragile. And with UWP, we don't allow you to match to a driver. But other than that, we've seen no loss of fidelity across it, and our deep intensive gamers have gone and checked it out. So we'd have to see the exact hardware to figure it out.
That's absolutely fine. Thank you for clearing it up. And Quantum Bake is a really nice game, everyone.
Thank you. We just got the ad in there on the end. Well done. Gentleman down there has been waiting.
I have two questions. First, about cognitive services, our Project Oxford. Some of APIs, for example, age verification or gender verification works with static images, so you need to upload the photo. And the question is, do you plan to support live or streaming video? And second question is, how Microsoft is supporting development in robotics space? Thank you.
So for the first one, you say you want to do video, right? You want to see if it can use video to detect faces?
If I have my video and if I have an app, I want in real time identify, for example, gender or...
Yeah, the challenge with that, if you think about a REST API where you send up the video stream, there's all kinds of challenges performance-wise. Really what you want to do is take a still frame from the video and just send that to Project Oxford. That's probably the easiest way of doing it, is you can easily, with our media APIs, just take a snapshot and then send the snapshot versus the entire stream. So I don't think we're planning on supporting a video stream to it. Again, it's a performance-intensive, network-intensive operation where you can just take a snapshot of the exact frame that you want and go send that up. Mm-hmm. And the second question?
Robotics.
Robotics?
Yeah. There was some announcement about your cooperation with SoftBank and Aldebaran about the Pepper robot, but there's no visibility of what's happening actually in this space.
Yeah, I don't have any knowledge. I don't know about you guys. I don't have any knowledge of that.
And okay. I'm afraid not.
Just to come back, sir, on your first question, one of the great things that's in the UWP is we do have facial detection APIs in the UWP. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a user, well, firstly, they can tell you if you've got a user in front of the camera or a number of users, and then you can get them nicely centered in that frame, so you can be streaming those frames locally. And then when you've got that centralized user, off you go to cognitive services and get that extra detail back from cognitive services would be the way that I think, coming back to what Kevin's talking about, bandwidth. And, and also the other thing that I'd say to you is cognitive services is a charged API. Yep. So you might want to think if you were streaming those 60 frames a second up to the cloud, that's very nice for Microsoft.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. I have seen a sample where it is doing that. Detecting faces in a live video and then taking a few of them, the age, the emotion APIs, and getting updates on those for everyone that's in the picture. So it can be done, but I think it's constantly checking in and calling the API locally. Yeah.
Yeah. Gentleman waiting over here on the mic.
I have two questions as well. The first one is related to the Linux subsystem. At the moment, you can't really run any form of server on the Linux subsystem, so a MySQL database or Apache or an X server, for example, and then access that from outside in the Windows environment. Is there any plan to implement that or get that working? And the second question, is related to hosted apps. How do you deal with updates to the application that might, break the user experience or damage it, or are potentially malicious if they already have permissions?
So the first one is, will we allow you? We're not really looking to go. So the goal of the Linux subsystem is not to go start to create X terms and start to mix graphical UI with the regular UI. It's not really the goal. Our goal was looking at the command line tools and making sure you can run that environment, especially if you want to remote into a server. And so it's not really like we're looking to go solve that problem. If other people fill in that gap and they go try some stuff there, I just haven't seen it as a great user experience right now. Hosting and running a web server, I think it's something we've thought about doing there, especially if you're going to be able to test against it and running in your local instance. And even we've even had some look at some container technology. So far, we haven't moved forward and solved a bunch of those, because if you really want fidelity there, you can just run a VM, right? The easiest thing, if you really just want to run a web server or if you want to run a container, is we have all kinds of container. I mean, we have so many container technologies, it makes my head spin. And the goal of this was not to invent another container technology that had a different set of trade-offs. So the thought there is, I mean, it'd be interesting to see the scenario and whether or not one of the other container technologies would work. But in general, if you're going to run a service, just boot up a VM and run the VM. It tends to lead to higher fidelity support than it would be running it inside of the current subsystem. And to be very honest, I'm a little jealous of this, and I'm protecting it for developers. That tends to be for workloads. And I don't want our basic Linux subsystem in the bash shell moving into a workload model and trying to solve all these workloads versus a pure developer scenario. And so I'm thinking of the developer workflow for it more. And then I'm letting Scott go solve, got Guthrie go solve on the Azure, I have all the container goo, what he needs there to go run containers for workloads. So I'm a little protective of making sure that environment stays a goal to make it great for developers, not for workloads. It's also one of the reasons why we run it under dev mode. And then the second question was?
About web app.
Sorry.
Web apps. Hosted web app, what happens if they become malicious? We revoke the app just like any other app.
Okay, but would you like? Do you find that out after they've pushed a change? Do you have to sort of, you know, is there a stagger or?
Because of the way it works, we probably find it in after they do it. But any app can do it after too. I mean, we can't detect what the code does. They can go be. I mean, think about it. If you're a malicious app, I can just not do anything malicious for a while, and then one day be malicious, and that's really hard to detect, right? You can't detect non-malicious code not running, and so we'll do the same thing. If you go and you put it in there, and we don't happen to detect it up front. When we see it, we revoke it. So one of the risks there is a number of customers will see the problem, but then we get to contain it. And then we also try to remove it from the system so that it never gets run again.
Okay.
And Windows Defender will try to protect you the first
time. If it figures it out, it will. But we know some will get through. And then we revoke the application.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Gentleman was waiting over here.
So, can you give us more insights about React Native for UWP, some timelines if it's possible, and what is the performance against the normal C-sharp UWP development?
So I don't think I have any roadmap. I don't think anybody else has any roadmap data. I think if they specifically, I just don't have if they published it, they published it. And the performance, I actually have not seen the performance data against it either. I think it probably depends on what you're doing. And so I just haven't seen it. I don't know that we've sat there and thought of it as a trade-off of performance. Obviously, other people look at it. Most of the people either, they've already made a bet on it and they want to go use React Native and they like it because of the capabilities and the cross-platformness. You can reuse it in multiple places. They tend to go that route. Do you guys know any, data on that?
Yeah. Thank you. Gentleman waiting over here, Traveler, I think it says.
Hi, with Cortana in UWP, how will Cortana integrate with the current voice user interface? Or if it will integrate at all? And sorry, a second question. On web-hosted apps, can we emulate the same behavior as the current voice user interface?
So the first question, I think we have to think about what Cortana means. Cortana at this point does not really run within an application. So Cortana can launch the application and begin it. And one of the challenges we have today that if you want to complete the action with speech, and I've actually demoed this on stage, you know, and it's great when you do it on stage, but you realize writing a speech-enabled app is not trivial at this point. You'd have to do a lot of the language parsing, a lot of the conversational understanding, and you'll see the direction we're heading with our conversational cognitive services and Lewis, where we want to make it easier. Really, the next step is for us to start making, you know, speech-enabled controls. That's when I think it'll become very, very simple. So to me, it's conversationally enabled apps, and Cortana will help launch your app, deep link into your application, or help you do tasks between apps. Once you're in the app, I tend not to think of that as Cortana. I think of that as a speech-enabled app. And we really have given you the base building blocks. And you know, before we gave you all the Ink toolbar and those things, we had the same thing in Ink. You can go do it all yourself. We need to make that step up, and that's something we're thinking very heavy of, especially if you think about the HoloLens device. It is a speech-first device. Sure, you have a gesture, but your primary way you want to interact with things is via speech. So as we evolve and move forward that world, we're going to be investing very, very heavily in making it possible to simply use speech against your applications like you do with game controller, like you do a touch pen. And so we're thinking very heavily, but there's nothing we have right now other than the base building blocks. And I don't remember the second question because I talked a lot about the first one.
If we can emulate the same behavior that we currently see on the voice user interface in a web-hosted app.
I believe all the speech APIs are WinRT APIs. And so with WinRT APIs, you can get access to them from hosted web app. So anything that uses the WinRT calling convention is accessible from a hosted web app. If it uses a C++ or C# calling convention, obviously you need to build a component and then do interop between the two. But I believe they're WinRT APIs or someone, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I think they all are. I think you have full access to everything we do.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. This gentleman here. Have the microphone.
Okay. Does it work?
Yes.
Can you UWP convert the one-click application?
One click.
One-click installer. Can you
It pretty much doesn't care. When it does it, it literally launches a VM and just records everything. So it can be a setup.exe, it can be an MSI, it can be anything. It actually doesn't look at the MSI. It actually records what happens during installation and then replays it and saves it into the AppX. So it can be anything.
So it's kind of take all the files from one click and deploy.
You do it one click as long as it can launch within that VM, and I believe it.
So what about one click's ability to run from online and kind of doing the online update?
That is how one click works. We actually don't do that. It's an AppX, and we would go through the AppX deployment stack.
So it will be ignored simply. I'm afraid it will kind of cause the problems between the UWP update and.
If you try to use the same app, one with an AppX and one with a one click, I think the identities would be different. So they would both. They should go side by side, except your app may not work side by side very well if it used shared services. But I'd hope it'd be side by side. But it depends on the app. It's not 100% fidelity. Let's be very clear. The converter, you know, for a lot of scenarios, will get you all the way there. But if you do some complex things, or you do very custom extensions, a lot of those things won't work, and you'll have to go fix it by hand.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much. Waiting down there on the microphone. Thank you.
So I've been using Azure with worker roles, web roles, which sit traditionally on the PaaS environment, whereby the operating system is patched, et cetera, for me, which is really good. Now, the recommendation is now to go towards microservices, which sit in the service fabric more on the IaaS side. So do I now need to worry about patching my boxes, et cetera, or does Azure look after service fabric patching for me?
The current iteration of it, it's still VMs that you will have to patch. It does have some level. It's getting better and better. So it will get to that point. If it's not at that point already, it is considered as it's a separate resource type. So it's considered a service fabric type that has a runner inside of it that's similar to the one that we had. And I'm just not sure if it will keep patching itself the whole time like the web roles and worker roles did, but I do know that it does maintain some level of support for auto-updating and recreating itself.
Yeah, because obviously there's an extra cost for me for running a business,
right.
Because I've got to then...
To maintain those VMs.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. So is there a direction Microsoft are going to go to look at doing that patching
boxes? Yes, so that's definitely the direction that it's going, is to also maintain the VMs themselves.
And what's the sort of time scales on that?
I don't have any time frames yet, yeah. Right,
cheers. Mm.
Thank you. You were waiting over here. Mind your various bottles and cups and things, and Serge.
So I've been looking at the BBC Micro bit, and it's a really interesting device, but one of the problems, or one of the limitations, is the 16 kilobytes of RAM, especially when it comes to doing work with the Bluetooth stack. Are there any plans that Microsoft has to kind of bring something like .NET Core or other languages or environments or capabilities to devices where you are incredibly limited on the amount of either processing power or storage that you've got available?
I think for most of those Windows IoT cores, kind of our lowest level supported platform. So anything below that, and I don't know what the actual minimum requirements are for it, But those are probably the lowest end devices that as of today we support.
Yeah, so today the SDKs and the support that we have and examples that we have are for like a C-based program where you write directly to the device. But that's a good question for .NET Core itself, especially at the moment it runs on Windows or Linux. So you'd have to choose a device that runs one of those, Windows IoT Core or the Linux one, or RTOS or something like that. But I don't know if it's going to get to that level of specific device that is pretty small.
Cool, thank you. So far, this area in the center has been a hot spot of questions, and the gentleman's waiting over there. If I can catch you with this. Oh, yeah, especially if you stand up. There you go.
Yeah, hi. So after a years-long university dissertation, I feel remiss if I didn't ask. So there's been a lot of development with the HoloLens at the moment, but I'm wondering if there's any plans to progress the Kinect sensor, which you've got on the table there. Is there any sort of improvements to the skeletal tracking or anything that you might learn from the HoloLens that can be brought over?
If you think about the technology to do all of the spatial mapping, skeletal tracking, that all is independent of whether it's coming from the HoloLens or if it's coming from the Kinect. All you really need is depth sensor raw data, and then we can do much of that processing. So the technology is pretty much layered pretty well there.
Sure. It was mainly on the back of that, but I wondered whether there was another version to be expected for the Kinect.
Yeah, there's nothing to announce there. I can just tell you that technology is reusable between them.
Yeah.
But as far as announcing anything, there's nothing to announce.
Okay. Thought I'd give it a go.
I will be announcing nothing.
Thank you very much. There's no question down on this mic. Anyone down there got questions? Who want to head to the mic? There's no question down on... Oh, John's got a question. Here you go.
You mentioned the firmware updates for IoT Hub. Will that be specific to specific devices, so only to IoT?
Yeah, so it depends on the solution that you write onto the device itself. So you will know the devices that you're deploying out there, and it helps with understanding the regular management protocols to update the firmware and let you know where to download the updated firmware from. But you still have to write some code as part of your firmware that gets baked into the device to run that update and then report back to Azure.
And is that reliant on the device maker? Or on the developer who?
Some of them will have that already part of it, but some of the more basic devices you would have to write it yourself to tell it to. Here's a firmware update, and then each because there's so many devices out there, we can keep track. But each one of them will have a way to update the firmware, and you just need to trigger that with the package that you get from the update. Right. So there will be some work on your part to know that you want to support that that feature, and then trigger it from inside the device once it gets the command from Azure. Yeah.
Thank you.
Matt is waiting over there.
So UWP is great because we can build an app and deploy it to 6 different families of devices. And that's really good. I just wondered if you had any examples of companies or apps which have been deployed to more than 2.
To what?
More than 2 families of devices. So someone who's done more than just desktop and phone or just desktop and Xbox or something.
Well, so most of them haven't been released yet. So there's none that have published Xboxes, not public yet, HoloLens. There are some apps that I have seen being published there. So in many cases, I expect to start seeing them over time as these device families, in essence, light up. So we definitely have some. I'm not announcing anything, so I'm not announcing any apps that are coming to the store that aren't there. And so you'll see applications that will come to all those device families as they basically ship in RTM.
So are there companies who are actively saying, yes, we're going to build once and it will go to everywhere? Or have they come back and said, actually, we're going to build a separate package for different things?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely companies that are doing that. Most of them are people that, make sense. If I look at media companies, I expect most who have media want to be consumed in many different forms. So I'll take categories. Games, Now, not every game makes sense on every device. So a lot of times games are tailored to the input form. So I have not seen them all want to go to all devices. Sometimes they'll pick the ones that make the most sense. But the companies will publish different games to all the devices. So there's different ways of looking at it. I look at media saying, hey, a lot of them will come to all the devices. Pick your favorite media application. Games tend to come to several, but not always all. But the same publisher publishes, you know, studio will publish to the devices, but they'll build tailored games that make sense on each of those device form factors.
Okay, thank you.
Cool, thank you. You were waiting down here. This is going to be your third question. Go for it.
Okay. Well, modern devices support Windows Hello, but as I know so far, the API for the infrared camera or iris scanner isn't available yet. Are there any plans to bring to allow apps use infrared camera or iris scanner rather than Windows Hello as a whole?
So Windows Hello doesn't require those technologies. So it's a frame. It's the kind of visible frame part of the interaction with the computer for authentication. But underneath that, we've got this Microsoft Passport technology. But essentially, it's all about two-factor authentication. It's all about, this is why you part of the setup is to put a PIN code in, which kind of seems a bit weird. You're thinking, oh, well, how can this be more secure than a password? But the point is, when you set that up, you're then putting a private public key pair. You're storing that in the secure chip in your machine, and that's then used for the authentication process. So your authentication becomes not only the PIN code or the facial recognition or the iris scanning, and obviously we'll use the best one that the device actually offers, but it's the fact it's that combined with the device, with the certificate you've generated as part of setting that up. So you've got two things that an attacker has to have in order to break your authentication. So those technologies are great because they are more interesting and secure ways of authenticating the user on a capable machine, but they're not absolutely critical part of making that technology work. Oh, that's a different question. I misunderstood.
What I think you're asking for is, do we have a low-level access to the various different technologies, and have we layered the stack so you can pull out information at any given point? At Windows Hello, we'll do a bunch of the work, and all you really ask for, hey, authenticate me, and then we'll authenticate you in the ways that are supported on that hardware. As far as access to infrared APIs, I mean, we can definitely take that under consideration about whether or not we add support and what level of support you want for the infrared camera. But right now, it would be a feature request about whether to add that API or not. So I don't believe we give access to it. And I think you're also saying, will you give access to tell me, is it someone's eye? And like how we layer that API, I think, is something we have to think heavily about.
One thing to consider, if you're looking at cameras like the Kinect for Windows V2 or Intel's RealSense camera, there are some APIs within Windows.Perception that start to surface some of that data into UWP. So some of that is there.
But you'd have to do all the work yourself.
You do have to do all the work yourself.
To figure out if it's the same iris or not.
Yeah.
Or the same
thing. So
there's additional work we're doing there.
I should caveat that. It's nothing to do with irises. It's everything to do with frames from a camera.
Exactly.
That's all you get. That's all you get.
Okay, so there'll be some raw API to get the raw pixels, and then it's up to you to do anything else from it. 14.3.3.3.2.3?
Basically, any current web build, you'll have access. The Kinect team posted a blog post about the work they're doing there. It's worth having a read to see the way they're layering that up.
That's exactly where I just got that data.
It's in that blog post there. Sorry, yes, you're waiting down there.
So not so much of a question, but an answer to the device family thing. So a bit of shameless promotion. So I work for BT. We've got BT Sport. So BT Sport is a universal app on phone and desktop. We are actively working on something to do with Xbox. I would really like if I can get the backing for it to look at it on HoloLens as well. So yes, there are companies out there looking for more than two device families.
Cool. Great.
And I couldn't come up with the six. I was going to ask, what were the six? I only know five. That's okay. I'll ask you later what the six device families are.
I'm having to count now.
Yeah, that's a good problem to have.
And one of them we don't right now allow anything but side-loaded apps in the enterprise, which is Surface Hub. So there's not actually a store for it. But other than that, I only had five. So we got all the ones that mattered.
Stuart.
Skype one.
People have this unfortunate habit of paying me to develop things, and at the moment they're paying me for WPF a lot. And I love seeing the animated kitten GIFs that I can put into the new image controls. I love seeing edit and continue in XAML. Is any of that coming to WPF in VS 15?
The GIF support, no, I don't believe that is. And the edit continue, I think that is. I thought edit continue was something that was on the list. I'm not sure when or which, but I know it's something we've considered and it's on the list.
Is that published anywhere? What's coming?
I don't know what's published. I only know what I've seen.
Cool, thank you.
So I might have said something that maybe is early, so I can't remember exactly when that's coming up, but something we'd like to add to WPF is edit and continue with XAML, but GIF, I don't believe GIF support is planned. It was hard enough to get into UWP, man. I know
it's new technology.
It's something that's been around for years and just took forever to get in. And I've been in XAML since 2001, so it's been a long time coming.
Cool, thank you.
Oh, gentleman here.
Hello again. I'm a recent Windows Phone developer. Just started developing an app for Windows, but things are on Windows Phone and are very quiet. Since last Windows Build event in the States, there's been no announcement, there's not even a mention of Windows phones. So can we get any updates on what's happening in Windows phone land, please?
So, Windows Phone is fully supported. We're fully behind it. I'll say that so everybody hears it. We're not abandoning the phone, right? We're 100% behind Windows Phone, and our goal is continue to go move it forward. Make sure it's a great device and well-supported. So the lack of comment there is really it's just part of the next wave of the Windows anniversary update, and it will be available, has the same operating running, so there's really no change in what our direction or strategy is with respect to releasing the Windows Phone software. We have talked a little bit about our focus. In some ways, our focus on the hardware side, but on the software side, we really haven't changed. It's one core. It's running one operating system. It runs UWPs the same as everything else, fully supported. So I think people have tried to read more into some of our recent announcements, other than really just some of the decisions we've made on the hardware side. And on the hardware side, we're really aligned to what we've done on the Windows desktop, which is we will lead with some high-end and some category innovation like we've done with Surface, and we're going to go back to really an OEM model. OEMs will go and build the breadth of the catalog across it, much like we literally do with Windows. And that was actually our original phone strategy as well. We sort of brought in Nokia to kind of go fill out a bunch of that internally, and we've decided to do that kind of back the old way and the way we've done it in Windows. So the hardware has changed. There's really no directional change in our software side.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks for asking the question. I know a lot of people ask it.
Here you go.
Hi. That's a follow-on question, really. I was just wondering, with the ever-increasing power of smartphone, how far do you see it into the future, it being before we can run a full copy of Windows 10 on a smartphone-style device?
If you look at the hardware capabilities, some of the high-end phones, I don't know what the hardware difference, I don't think there is. The form factor difference matters. And so, the capability of running super powerful desktop-level applications on some of the high-end phones, it's really about the hardware that you attach to it, the screen size, and whether or not the input's there that's equivalent to go run that experience. And so I see, if you look at Continuum, I think you can kind of see our North Star. Our goal is to run a full desktop experience there, and therefore you can carry your one device with you. You attach a large screen to it, and a mouse keyboard, you should get the desktop experience. You attach a VR device to it, you should get a VR experience. If you're on a desktop and you count a VR or a mixed reality device, it should give you a mixed reality experience. And so I tend to think compute and the power of the compute is going to be kind of generalized. And then it's really about the input and the outputs that will tell you the experience you're going to run, what type of shell you expect to be there. And it's not like literally the piece of silicon. It's more the inputs attached to it and then the compute power that's in the device. So again, you've seen that with Continuum, and I think you'll see us keep pushing the envelope there to get a better and better experience for our customers. You carry one device around, and it does all the stuff you need.
So where's the need for a Windows phone operating system when you could be just running a full-blown copy of Windows, which is using all those facilities of the hardware?
You're asking why do we have, in essence, this thing we call one-core OS versus just, hey, just take the desktop SKU and run the whole desktop SKU.
Obviously,
on high-end phones and on high-end devices, I think it's a good question, and we've debated internally and thought about it, but we think right now really running a consistent OS across them is what makes sense. For low-end, and there's always going to continue to be a low-end, then you really need that lower-end OS that's thinner and lighter and really runs UWPs across that entire device spectrum. So I think more about it as, hey, I think desktop-specific applications can still come to UWP. I think some people misunderstand UWP as being, it must be an app that runs across all devices or it's not a UWP. I don't think that's true. The goal being, if you want to build something that's desktop class, like say Visual Studio, you want to build it as UWP, I think that's something we should enable. It's really the new application model that we're building. So if you build it for a specific device form factor like the HoloLens that takes advantage of all that capability, it should be able to specialize all the way. And maybe it doesn't even make sense in 2D. So universal platform really means the APIs and the platform is consistent. And then you can build these high class, even highly tailored applications per form factor. And it really means you should be able to run them if you put the mouse and keyboard or if you put the VR lens, like a head-mounted device, and then it lights it up based on the inputs and outputs. Does that kind of answer the question of a visionary direction?
Okay. And at a tangent, follow-on question for something that was discussed before. If you get a malicious app up on the store and you revoke it, does that actually force the uninstall of everybody's copy out in the wild?
I don't think it forces an uninstall. I think it disables the app in some cases. Right. And so I think we have a couple different levers. We can stop new installs. I think we can go and then, in essence, we can do the more harsh thing of disabling it, and that would be done through Defender in most cases, because Defender is out there running a service versus the store, and so Defender will come in there and typically find that. So think of that as an operation of Defender that we would go release, and Defender can go and disable the app very rapidly, depending on how malicious it really is. In a lot of cases, we'll just disable the application from new installs. That's a lighter way. It's not always doing terribly malicious things. But if it's purely out there, a security exploit with elevation take out, Defender goes and will eliminate that in any ways, even if it was any type of application running. Or even if it's tried to elevate, Defender will try and resolve that as well.
Okay. Thank you. Cool, thank you. Go for it. I was just about to say there's no question at that microphone when a question arrived. Go ahead.
Just a follow-up question. Is there any plans for a Windows on ARM port, just like WinRT did? So you basically don't have a tablet port, right, which runs on ARM processors?
Windows does run on ARM. That's how our phones run.
But you don't have a larger shell, just like RT used to do, WinRT?
I'm not sure what you're asking about. So we have, in essence, Windows and one core UWP all run on ARM, and so that's fully supported. And that will continue.
But it's limited till 7-inch devices, right? It doesn't go beyond that.
Well, it's talked about where we would license it. So you're asking about which OEM hardware we would license our ARM port to. That I can't discuss either. That's all about licensing. It's not about tech. What I'll tell you is it runs on the hardware. And so whether or not we license it, that's not my job. Thank God.
I think we've got, by the looks of the room, we've got one last question from our favorite questioner. It looks like this may be the last question, unless you have more. Go ahead.
Okay. No, that's my last question I have so far. Well, right now, let's face it, Windows 10 Mobile wasn't very, very well accepted by the market because of its performance problems. right now that Windows 10 Mobile Anniversary Update for phones is becoming better, will you reconsider adding previous devices you've removed from receiving Windows 10 Mobile?
As far as which devices will support when it comes out, are you asking, will Windows 10 Anniversary Update support more devices than Windows 10 Mobile supported?
Yes.
I do not know of any plans to expand to new device form, to new devices that beyond what we've supported with Windows 10 Mobile. So I don't know of any plans to do that. I'm not saying there aren't, but as of right now, I think it would be the same set of devices that we would go and get updated.
Thank you. I see no questions over in this direction. Anyone here got a burning question they need to get answered? No. Anyone in the hot zone in the middle of the room? No. Jay has a question that he needs to get answered. Come on up.
Any idea on what happens to smartwatches and Microsoft Windows on smartwatches? Any platform ideas there?
So what are we doing in smartwatches? We have our band.
Yeah.
And that we continue to support, and we continue to have, you know, actually I think a lot of people enjoy them. It's a great device.
Yeah.
I've worn it periodically. I tend not to wear a whole lot of stuff, but I do when I wear it, I enjoy it. It has great functionality. So I'm not here to announce any new hardware or hardware roadmaps, other than it's a great device and go buy one.
Yeah, yeah, I have one.
Great, buy another. Give it to a friend.
Yeah, I was just wondering if there's an... Okay, yeah, you probably not the time to announce it anyway.
Say, yeah, no, there's nothing to announce. I'm not announcing.
Cool, thank you. I think we have one last question. Go ahead.
I just want to ask one more thing. It's wrong, oh, yeah. So I want to ask one more thing, extend his question. Any idea about, for example, encouraging Pebble or any other kind of third-party, not Android, iOS watches to support Windows?
We've had discussions with them, and something we continue to have ongoing discussions with, ultimately, you know, lots of different, you know, software hardware manufacturers about these different pieces. So when there's something to announce there, we'll announce it. But yes, we continue to want to have, you know, great support from our partners.
One piece that we have that supports both Android Wear and Apple Watch is Xamarin. So if you want to build there's a few examples out there where not only you have UWP, iOS, Android, but also the wearables for those two.
Yeah, you want it to connect up, and you want to support the Bluetooth and the different protocols, and have the applications there to connect to it.
Oh, stack, sorry.
Yeah.
Right now, it's banned or nothing. If I want to buy something else,
I have nothing to announce this morning. And I would love for them to work with us, and I've had discussions with them, but you know, we're definitely open to it. It's not something we're precluding, saying no, but there's no.
So when it happens, it happens.
When it happens, it happens.
Cool. Thank you. I think we're going. Anyone? Going? Gone. Just check with you. You're good. Okay. Thank you for those questions. They're brilliant questions. Thank you so much. Thanks to the panel for answering them.